Welcome again to the Golfing Mind, that time of the week when you just relax, put your feet up, maybe light a cigar, pour yourself a bourbon, unless you're driving a car, in which case you must not do any of those things. But it's that time of the week that we sort of look at the game of golf in general and the mental game, when appropriate, we look at very specifically. And today, I think, is a little combination of both. Subject to a series of events which have found me looking to get new golf clubs. And when I say new golf clubs, I don't necessarily mean brand new golf clubs, though I may do, but get a replacement set. Why? Why do I suddenly need a replacement set of golf clubs? Well, in the old days, when you had a car, you would put your key in the door to lock the car. Very good. Very sensible system. Nowadays, we have a fob and a button. So we press the button and the car locks or unlocks. Sorry if I appear to be explaining something to you that you already know, but you never know. There could be someone out there going, really? What's he talking about? Anyway, I unexpectedly had to go into hospital. And when I came out of hospital, I was walking back to my home. And I live in the middle of London, so I don't have a driveway. I park my car outside my home when possible. And I noticed the passenger door didn't look like it was completely closed. And then I noticed the wing mirrors were in the open position. Now, this would suppose the car had been entered. So I went up and I could see someone had sort of rummaged through the glove box and the car. And I thought, uh-oh, I've got a set of golf clubs in the trunk. See, I'm using American words. Trunk. Boot in Britain, but you know, the back of the car. And I opened it and the clubs were gone. Can you believe it? So obviously some opportunist had either found a way to open the car or potentially, I suspect, I hadn't locked it. I pressed a button and just kept it open. And it kind of frustrates me to think that in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock, someone's walking down the streets of London with a set of golf clubs and there is no policeman around to say, hey, buddy, what are you doing? So my clubs are gone. So what does that mean? It means I have to get more clubs, which is always kind of, for some people, a really exciting time and for other people, a bit of a frustrating time. So what did I do? Well, over the years, I've been very fortunate to know a lot of professionals who can arrange for me to get a club fitting. And I wanted to get a club fitting, so I thought, I know. I went to my local range, and it's always a bit suspicious when you can get a club fitting right there, right then, because normally you have to make an appointment. So they took me into the little studio, and there's a moment of terrible vanity that most golfers have. I think most of us think we're better than we really are. Some of us are fairly honest. And I'm always, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you'll know that I always say, if someone says, what kind of putter are you? Tell them you're a good putter. So have a very positive self-image about yourself. But equally, don't walk into a fitting room saying, I need extra stiff shafts, half an inch over long. I need, I only play with muscle back blades and I don't believe in hybrids. You don't do that. And there was a fellow who said, oh, I can give you a fitting. And he was a very nice fellow. He was very, very big. I mean, really, really big, which is a euphemism for a bit fat. Well, in fact, he was very fat. And it's one of those figures. And I used to work in television. There was a fellow there who was, you know, I mean, hugely overweight, but he was the best dancer. On his feet, he was so light. And this fellow, I have no doubt, was a good golfer. And how do I know that? Well, firstly, he told me so, which is always not necessarily the best recommendation. But he said to me, what are you looking for? And I told him I looked for a set of woods which are forgiving. I wanted a set of cavity-backed, weight-distributed irons. And though I play stiff shafts, I'm now in my later 60s. I think I should go to regular shafts. So he said, well, is there any brand in particular? I said, well, I like Ping. I like Callaway, I like TaylorMade. Yeah, I said I'm not married to one brand. I mean, I used to be a massive Titleist boy. You know, Titleist this, Titleist that, Titleist underwear, everything Titleist. And I one day played another brand and I went, oh, this seems easier. So I decided to potentially go with another, well, I did go with another brand. What am I talking about? So what happened in the fitting? First of all, there's a lot of flattery. You take a couple of swings. Now, you may resemble a rather old man chopping wood in a winter's morning. Irrespective of that, I get quite a lot of flattery. Oh, good-looking swing, sir. I think that's... I can see you've played a bit of golf, and which is always better than... Oh, I can see you've spent time in the Canadian outback chopping logs. So he said to me, I think we need to... And he went off and he came back with three different brands. And I won't say which they are, not because it's improper of me to show favoritism, but I may be very critical of one or two, and it's a very subjective opinion I'm expressing, not scientific, so I wouldn't wish to do that. But he gave me the first club, and he said, this is the new technology. And you can really have good fun with this if you go to a golf place. You can actually say to the guy, what's the difference between this one and that one? And they'll start talking about centers of gravity, spin rate. They'll talk about inertia, all this stickability on the club face. And I don't think they know what they're talking about, really. I mean, they're having to say something. The reps come and said, this is the big differential factor between that club and this club. And that's why our club is better than that club. And so I played with the three wood drivers. And, you know, I went with a friend of mine in America to watch him hit balls in a simulator. And he was hitting it 280, 290. So I'm thinking to myself, well, I guess. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, I should be hitting it at least, oh, I don't know, 260, 265. And then the first one came up at around 245. So obviously I told him, you need to go and check your track, man, because it's not working. And unfortunately, he didn't even have the courtesy to pretend I might be right. He said, no, sir, it's very accurate. And then I took another driver. And what I realized with the next driver I took, I thought, well, I need to hit this harder. So I did, and I got about 247 yards. To which he immediately goes, I see, this definitely seems to suit you more. And my swing speed wasn't above 100 miles an hour. In fact, it was much closer to 90, which really surprised me. Anyway, I continued with this charade, and he kept coming back to the most expensive driver. And he then suggested that a gentleman of my skill level would be a great beneficiary of a specialist shaft. So obviously he knew what he was talking about. So he suggested a shaft which was, I think, an extra £300. So I did my very best poker face and acted like, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And he said it would stop me hooking the ball. I thought maybe £300 in lessons would do the same thing, but we didn't have that discussion. He then gave me the 3 wood that matched the driver and the 5 wood. And I then decided, you know, I needed to bring up a very difficult subject for golfers as they get older. I had to ask about hybrids. Ooh. And he kind of started off by saying, well, sir, I don't know if you necessarily need a hybrid. And I pointed out that most of the tour players on the European and the American tours, you know, the DP Tour and the PGA Tour, and dare I say the LIV Tour these days, they use hybrids. And, you know, if it's good enough for them, maybe I should look at them. So he said, well, maybe we look at a hybrid 3-iron. I said, well, and a 4-iron. So, again, we looked at three different manufacturers, including the same as the people who made the driver. And would you believe it? He concluded I needed the irons, which so happened, I mean, how this worked out, I'll never know, were the most expensive. And he needed to confirm that he thought, yep, I needed to be half an inch over and 2 degree upright, which I wasn't entirely sure about. So I decided to ask him a little bit about smash factor, which he did explain, to be very fair to him, but it might as well have been Stephen Hawking explaining relativity to Homer Simpson, because I had that kind of vacant, gentle nod of the head going on for quite a while. I was very surprised that he said I needed to stay on stiff shafts. He said, well, you still got good club head speed, and I can see you're still a good golfer. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure the word Robin, good, and golfer appear in the same sentence as often as they used to. And he then picked up a club to show me what that club could do. And he hit it, and he hit it a good 20 yards further, which I am putting down to his talent, his swing speed, and the momentum that he could get behind the club. But we then discussed cost. And, you know, there's a very good friend of mine who passed away many years ago. And he once said to me something that really helped me professionally in business. And I mean this very sincerely. He said, never be shy when it comes to talking about money. He said, it's just a number. Because before then, in my professional life, if someone asked me how much I would charge to do something, and let's say I wanted to charge, let's say, 10 million, no, that's a bit much, isn't it? Let's say I wanted to charge £750. Well, historically, when they asked me how much, there'd be a sort of hesitation, a look of shame, and then I'd mumble in a pleading tone, £750? With the notes to the actor playing my part in the biographical film of my life story, Mr. Seeger says this apologetically and with great hope in his eyes. And my dear friend Peter once said to me, say the price as though you have just given them the best news in the world and the biggest bargain in the world. So rather than say it apologetically, he said, say it with great sort of sharing of a secret. So ever since then, he'd say, just say 750. And do you know, it absolutely worked for me. It really did. So I said to the very enthusiastic sales man, club fitter, swing guide, man who'd almost turned professional. So, I said, I'm making fun of him. I'm not. He was a nice fellow, and he was trying too hard, and he was trying to present himself as too much of an expert. I love people that say, I'm not sure, but this seems to be working for you. But he just railroaded me towards the most expensive, and I knew they were the most expensive. So when he came in with the final price, I was just sort of, I really had to sort of think, okay, keep a very straight face. Don't do a double take like a Laurel and Hardy film. And don't sort of faint. That's not a good thing to do. So I said, oh, that's very interesting. I said, you know, I used to work in television, quickly trying to change the subject. And I said, when we did game shows, we always tried to create a sort of a quiz or a challenge show where it always came down to the last 5 minutes. And in the last 5 minutes, the contestant was given a choice. It might be which box to open, which envelope to pick, which, you know, it's always going to come down to a 50-50 to create tension and drama. And, I mean, what people don't know sometimes, back in the day, both envelopes had the same thing in them. But that was, as I say, back in the day, and generally these were for pretty humble prizes, so nothing too dramatic. But there was a moment before they chose the envelope or opened the box or did what they had to do, when the host would say, well, it's make your mind up time. So I said to this fella, I said, you know, I think for me, it's I need to make my mind up time. And he said, well, these clubs are very, very keenly in demand. And I said, well, how quickly can the order be fulfilled? And he said, oh, we can do it in 3 weeks. He said, because there's a back order. This club is unbelievably popular. And I said, oh, right, good. And as I was thinking about it, for about, I think, 0.006 seconds, because I decided I'm not buying these clubs. And, you know, at this point in my life, I really would rather invest in comfort than technology. And so I was reflecting, and I happened to say to him, oh, I've got a very good friend called Jim Hammond. And Jim was a guest in the show a number of weeks ago. And about 18 years ago, or 17 years ago, Jim, who is a very good tennis player and a very good rugby player and a very good cricketer and he's just good at sport. He was a natural. And he took up golf after meeting me, and he became what I would call a proficient golfer with a swing which looks more like a hockey swing. But his hand-eye coordination is fantastic. Wonderful putter, great short game. And he probably plays the handicap, I think, for about 16, 17. For a guy that doesn't belong to a club and who just plays 10, 15 times a year, he's a very good golfer, I think. Anyway, 17 years ago, Jim said, oh, I bought a set of golf clubs. I said, oh, that's wonderful. What did you get? He said, Texan. I said, Texan. He goes, Texan. I said, I've never heard of them. He goes, no, there was a special offer down at this store, and it was £99 for 3 woods, a set of irons, pitching wedge, sand iron, putter, golf bag, and 6 balls. And I said, wait, run this by me again. You've got a full set of 14 golf clubs, a golf bag, and 6 balls for £99. And I'm thinking, my driver cost £199 or £200 back then. So I thought, God, poor old Jim's been absolutely fleeced by some North Korean counterfeit company. I didn't want to sort of burst his bubble. I said, oh, that sounds good. Well, we're going to play 2 weeks later. And he turned up, and his golf bag had printed in large letter, Texan. And the 3 woods had covers on them that also said Texan. So this guy's got a full set of clubs, full bag, golf wood covers, a putter. And he stands up there, and he plays really well. And he really was hitting as well as I was hitting my, you know, top of the range Titleists, Woods, selection of wedges, Scotty Cameron putter. He played really well. Now, why am I telling the story? Well, 17 years later, he's still playing with these clubs. He's changed his driver to a Callaway, which he hits very well. But he has the same 3 wood and 5 wood, the same putter, and all the same irons. And the shafts, 16 years old, God knows what they were. So it really made me think, you know, I think if you're at the very top of your game, you owe it yourself to get fitted. I also think if you love your golf, get fitted, because the confidence fitted clubs give you is a sense of, well, I know the clubs work. And that allows you to invest in your mental conditioning, in your practice with your swing coach, knowing it's the right fit. And I compare it to a pair of shoes hiking. You can go and get a pair of shoes to hike with, and you'll get blisters, and they might never feel quite just right. But if you break them in for 6 weeks before the hike, and you find the hot spots, and you adjust them, you put orthotic insteps in, or you tighten them the way they're laced up, then they're really comfortable. And it's important that you feel comfortable. The same way my friend Jim feels very comfortable with his £99 set of golf clubs, so too do some people feel comfortable when they've been fitted and given the most expensive golf clubs money can buy. I didn't buy them. So I really do think it's in the head for a lot of us at our level. Now, I'm not talking about the elite amateurs. I'm not talking about professionals. I'm not talking about people who play golf for a living. But for the average club golfer, I think it is worth being fitted for your drivers and irons, if possible. And if it's even possible, have them adjusted. But for me, I remember, and I've told this story, I'm sure, many times before, I went to visit a friend in California. And he said, well, let's go play golf. And we went up to near Pacific Palisades, beautiful part of the coastline. And we drove down some canyon road, and we came to this new golf course. It's a pay and play, and I didn't have clubs, and I rented a set of golf clubs that were called Carnival, spelt with a K. And they looked like pings, but they weren't pings. And I went out there and played one of the best rounds of golf of my life. And I put it down to low expectation. You know, I was thinking, well, these are cheap imitation rentals. They're not going to be great for a guy like me. I'm just going to swing easy. And that's what I did. I swung easy. So I'm now going to have to get some new golf clubs. And I say new, I mean a new set for me, not brand new. And what I realize is that there's a couple of clubs I played with a few years ago that I really like. So I'll be on eBay, and I am currently looking at, I can say this because I didn't mention any of the brands, but I'm looking at the Ping wood. Whenever I talk to people that play the Ping, the G425, they absolutely love it, the G400. In fact, one of the golf clubs I had stolen was a G25, one of the original G series that played really well. So Ping woods, I'm going to go for, I'm pretty sure I'm going to go for TaylorMade irons, and I'm going to try and find myself some nice hybrids, probably TaylorMade if I can get them, and then probably some Titleist Vokey wedges. So that's what I'll be doing. But I'll find them on eBay. I'll put a composite set together, and they'll arrive not looking new, so people won't steal them, and they'll think I'm obviously a very experienced golfer. Well, that's it for this week. So I'm sorry you have had to listen to me ramble through my thoughts and reflections when getting fitted for golf clubs. And I think it is worth getting fitted if you love your golf, want to play your best and give yourself a best chance. But if you play 10, 15 times a year, then maybe it's not so necessary. I'll probably get a bunch of emails now from golf teachers going, what are you talking about? So there you have it. As always, I say, if you're very keen or interested in learning more about the mental game of golf, that aspect of the game which so many people overlook because it's, you know, they think they know it, it sounds a bit boring, then I can assure you it's not. It is fascinating when you get into it. I'm working on my final golf book at the moment, The Fundamentals of the Mental Game of Golf, which I hope will be out in October, and that will be a must-buy, I assure you. Also, I would like to point out that Silent Mind Golf is an audiobook, and if you're interested in getting a copy, it can be found on Audible. So Silent Mind Golf is now available on Audible. It's 4 hours and 50 minutes long. It comes with a guided meditation at the very end. You do not listen to that when you're driving or operating machinery. I have to say that frequently before and after that part of the book. And the book's a very nice read, and it's a very nice listen, I should say. So on your way to the golf course, there'll always be stuff to listen to. Some of you have bought the book because after I gave the sample last week, there was a great deal of interest in it. But until we speak again, may I wish you, wherever you are in the world, absolutely wonderful times on and off the golf course. And wherever you are, enjoy and play good golf. All the best.